This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, brought to you by Gold Rock Capital. Each week, we look at how high net worth families can improve their lives, decisions, and investments in a deeply uncertain world. We always aim to provide practical information, even if we can't offer specific investment advice. This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, and my name is Darren Rockman, and I'm a partner at Gold Rock Capital, the 21-year-old multifamily office servicing high net worth families in Israel and around the world. And today, as the special guest on the podcast, we have Paul Israel. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. You may have already picked up that Paul also has an Australian accent, being another Australian expat living in Israel, just like yours truly. Paul is actually the executive director of the Israel-Australia Chamber of Commerce, actually formerly the Israel-Australia-New Zealand and Oceania Chamber of Commerce, but that's a bit of a mouthful, which is an independent nonprofit that works to encourage and facilitate cross-border investment and commercial activity between Australasian companies and their counterparts here in Israel. He spent most of his career advising senior executives on these types of issues and probably knows more about the financial, cultural, and social exchanges that exist between Israel and Australia than almost anybody else. And for those of you that didn't know that Israel and Australia actually had a strong financial and economic relationship, I think you're about to find out. But let's take a step back, Paul. Tell us, go back a few decades. How has that relationship developed?
Sure. So first of all, Darren, thanks for having me on. So up until about 10 years ago, it was a very basic relationship. The trade is about $1 billion bilateral, and the investments coming in from both countries were very limited. We had two families that dominated. One was the Lieberman family that were the owners of Paz, the largest petrol retail chain in Israel, and also First International Bank, one of the largest banks in Israel. And then you have the Mandy family, which are the owners of James Richardson, the duty-free stores. And really, that was the relationship between the two countries beyond the actual trade. And this last 10 years, it's blossomed, and we've now got probably $1 billion of new money going between the two countries in the last few years.
And if we cast our mind back to the 50s, 60s, and 70s, there was a wave of investment by Australians in Israel, which didn't really work out that well.
Yeah. So there was actually like a wool factory and a textile factory set up by some Australian Jews that had moved to Israel. And a lot of people from the community have tried bits and pieces, but it was a different era then. And now Israel being part of OECD and modern economy, a lot of
the financial, but both on the trade side and also on the investment side, things have really expanded. Is that going in both directions? Is that money coming from Australia to Israel, but is there also money going from Israel back to Australia?
Yeah, so we have a lot of new money that's invested in Israeli funds. So things like Our Crowd, Square Peg, Ion, and others, which is very exciting, and other VCs and startups. Mm-hmm. But at the other side, we have Israeli companies investing in Australia. So there's probably about 150 Israeli companies employing thousands of Australians across the country in different industries from retail, agriculture, high tech, et cetera. Plus, there's about 20 Israeli companies listed on ASX. So it's really diversified and
on the Australian Stock Exchange. And what brings an Israeli company to list all the way out in Australia?
So often it's just an opportunity. So the ASX, the Australian Stock Exchange, the last few years was looking for more technology to be listed on their mm-hmm. board. And there's a lot of respect for Israeli companies. And it was just a great opportunity for companies to get extra capital, extra exposure. And we've seen now how the innovation ecosystem in Australia has really flourished in the last few years. So I think Israel's played some role in that.
Are we also seeing institutional capital, pension funds, provident funds, have been expanding globally at a rapid pace because the savings rate here is so high and there are limited opportunities for shekel-based investing? Most of that obviously has gone into the United States. Are we seeing that moving into Australia?
We're seeing a lot of flirting and checking, not a lot of actual...
You don't usually think of flirting amongst institutions.
That's right. A lot of checking, but Australia's very sophisticated. There's a lot of funds there already. So it's hard for Israeli ones to break in and get the good deals and good opportunities. But they are looking around. They are looking. Right. And we're hopeful something will happen soon.
All right. You know, where from the incoming into Israel, that capital, is all that capital going into the tech markets?
Mainly, yeah, definitely a high percentage. Probably, I'd say 90% is going into the high tech sector. either the funds or the startups. We actually had an acquisition, an Australian company called Aristocrat, one of the world's largest companies in gaming, slot machines, etc. Actually bought an Israeli company called Plarium for about $600 million because that's in the e-gaming space. That was very interesting.
We actually recently did a podcast on e-gaming. So anybody that wants to learn more about that sector is welcome to watch. And are you finding those are individual investors? Are these corporates making GIC investments? You know, these funds, how's it playing?
So initially it's been high net worth individuals. Now it's moving into family offices. Now it's the multifamily offices we're getting. And then we're getting people like Telstra Ventures and some large Australian corporate VCs are now really investigating the scene here. And we also have one of Australia's largest VC funds, Square Peg, actually has an office in Israel, has invested probably over $100 million US in the past 4 or 5.
When the corporates come out to Israel, what are they seeing here that they can't get back at home?
Sure. Yeah, that's really interesting. So pre-COVID, we were actually hosting about 40 delegations a year, 40, well over 1,000 people. And it's a mixture of looking at actual technological solutions, but also the culture of the ecosystem. So as we know, in Australia, the economy there is very much reliant on natural resources and agriculture. And there's been no need to develop its own innovation ecosystem. Israel's the opposite. So we're finding a lot of our delegates are coming to looking to buy, to invest. At the same time, understand the culture behind the ecosystem in Israel. And often people are saying coming here is more valuable than going to Silicon Valley, which is a big surprise to hear because of how open and transparent the Israeli business person is in telling his or her story. And also this informality is very much an Australian business culture, which is probably here on steroids. So when you think of informality,
bordering on the rude.
We call it being assertive. So exactly. You know, we say not every Israeli business person is honest, but they do tell you their story of where they failed, where they stuffed up in their journey to success. And that openness and frank discussion is really valuable to Australian business people.
Which is really interesting because from my recollection growing up in Australia on my regular visits there, there isn't that same tolerance for failure in Australia as there is in Israel.
Correct. So the cultural elements, one is in Israel, like Australia, we have what's called the tall poppy syndrome. So if you're successful in banking, you'll be smacked around in the media, but not if you're in high tech. And in the high tech sector in Israel, you're revered, and that whole celebrating success and creating role models is a big part of the ecosystem, sort of like how sports stars are revered in Australia. But on the flip side, like you spoke about, failure is a big part of the startup ecosystem. And how does your investment community approach failure? What is the attitude and the tolerance for that? And that's a big difference between the two countries and something that's very much part of the learning on these delegations.
With the Israel ethos being, you can try, you can fail, you just try again.
Yeah, and we talk about, there's a thing, I don't know if I could say this here, but I'll give it a go, Darren, is this thing called here, Fuck Up Nights, where entrepreneurs have got to get up on stage and talk about their journey and why they failed, etc. And that's a very important part of the culture here. And we also have it really interesting, people don't realize, also in the army, in the top crack army units, there's that whole openness to debate and challenging authority. Which is a really important part of the culture here.
Yeah. And I think also there's a very strong, you know, within the army culture, there's a very strong element of learning from mistakes. So the idea that every time something goes wrong, you have a very in-depth look at exactly what the decisions were taken, how you got to where you got to, and then learn for the future.
Yeah. So the whole debriefing and how junior officers can actually debrief a senior officer is a very important part of that culture. We know in Australia also, there's pretty much a flat structure when it comes to hierarchy, but here it's, again, much more extreme. And so it's very evident and very important in the innovation ecosystem.
Right. We talked about cultural elements. Let's talk about the other side. Where do you find that Israeli businessmen and Australian businessmen don't speak the same language? I recall years ago hearing Israeli entrepreneurs go to New York or London and they go to a meeting and some investor says, "Oh, that was very interesting. Thank you so much for coming in. You know, we really want to think about this." And they walk out thinking that there's a check in the mail. And of course, the guy was just being polite. Do you see those sort of cultural tensions or misunderstandings?
All the time. So we spend a lot of time coaching the Israeli business people on really listening, looking at the body language, and understanding that Australians often won't talk direct and won't tell you exactly what they're thinking. And it's new for Israelis because here it's so raw. There's no tech. There's no small talk. There's no being around the bush. We spent a lot of time talking about that, but also helping the Australians understand that the Israelis are just open and you're not second guessing, you know, what people are thinking. That's a big part of it.
Right. Yeah. As someone once told me, there's no word in Hebrew for subtle.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe give us a couple of examples of successful collaborations between Israel and Australia that you've seen develop, particularly during this corona period, post-corona.
Yeah, no, sure. So I think one thing is when people talk about innovation, people think it's just the last 20 years, but really it's from the founding of the country. We're talking about agriculture and lack of water, et cetera. 95% of Australian wineries, which is the Australian wine industry, is probably the third, fourth largest export in Australia. 95% of them use Israeli drip irrigation technology. So Darren, you go next, go to Australia, you go to an Australian farm, you're going to see Israeli pipes there in the ground, which is something to be very proud of. It's quite amazing. The commercialization model of universities, we don't talk enough about that when people talk about the ecosystem, but how Israeli universities actually take IP and commercialize it. We know in Australia there's a big, the Australian universities have some of the best IP, but their commercialization is failing. A lot of the customer service that Telstra and Optus, the big telcos, use are Israeli technology. And then, of course, probably nearly 90% of the Australian top 200 companies are using companies like Checkpoint for their cybersecurity. So it's very much spread and diverse.
And what about on the investment side? That's the commercial utilization. Where are you seeing on the investment side Australian companies or families coming in here and then really benefiting?
So at the moment, it's still quite early days. It's only the last six, 7 years. So initially, really, it's just the funds that really are making a difference. But we're not getting any fund a particular plug, but our crowd, which is one of the largest funds in Israel, about 25% of their money actually comes from Australia. It's very impressive.
Very significant. Yeah. And are there sort of areas that Australian investors have tended to focus in on, early stage investments? Are there specific sectors?
They're going to often like the later stage, things that are more market ready. And things that aren't too involved with deep technology. So initially, Israel's high-tech sector was on the semiconductors. There's not one semiconductor fab in the whole of Australia. So these are things that the Australian business person was hard to relate. But now with social media and technology, that people are using it in their homes and the like, it's a lot more understandable.
So as Israel has become, the technology sector here has become more consumer-focused. Because if you went back 20, 30 years, it was really a B2B. You were selling to telcos. You were selling to data centers. That's a bit of a generalization. The large part of it actually was not consumer facing. And today there's a lot more of that, right?
Correct. And there's a whole new sector, for example, HR tech. Who would have thought that Israel's a world leader in HR tech? So these are things that anybody can actually relate to in the onboarding of new staff, recruiting new staff, managing your staff better, those sort of things.
Right. And of course, this is all built on what's been traditionally a very strong political relationship between Australia and Israel, which has had some ups and downs. Australia has been a pretty consistent supporter of Israel for decades now.
Correct. We see that in the UN and different international forums. It's been bipartisan support. We just had a change of government federally. It's now Labor government in Australia. But the signs are that the support will continue. But it's something that has to be worked on day in, day out at a grassroots level as well.
Okay. And if you're looking forward now, the next few years, obviously a lot of the success of this relationship, frankly, has come down to the work that your office and yourself have done in promoting. It doesn't just happen. What do you see going forward over the next few years?
I think a big part of it is actually using Australia more of as a springboard to the region. So we look at countries like Malaysia and Indonesia that don't have relations with Israel, yet we do now have with UAE and Bahrain, et cetera. We foresee that it won't be long before that will open up. And I think Australia is going to play a huge role.
Okay, you've heard it here first. Paul Israel quotes, Israel and Malaysia make peace.
And Indonesia. And on top of that, what's really interesting is the innovation ecosystem in Australia has quadrupled in the last 3 years. The VC market there has gone from a few hundred million dollars a year to now a few billion dollars a year. And I think there'll be more joint venturing between the two markets, which is really exciting.
So actually this VC market is investing in domestic Australian technologies?
Yes, and we're seeing the Australian pension funds you referred to earlier also supporting it. And we're seeing more so the state governments and the federal government supporting it. But it's really just, it's evolved. And I think us and Israel have played a role in encouraging that, which is really exciting.
Right. I'm going to ask this question in two directions. Let's start with the Israel side. So if you're an Israeli businessman looking to pitch your company to an Australian audience, What are the sort of important financial and cultural buttons that you need to know how to press?
So the most important thing is the robustness of the technology, the reliability of the technology, and the fact that you're unique and you're first to market. So Australians, at the end of the day, who don't develop enough technology are early adopters. They do want to know that this is something that's unique and reliable and robust. And then also a really important thing which we're looking to strengthen is having partners, having channel partners. So having good technology in the customer is not enough. You need local partners on the ground servicing the customer.
Which I suppose is interesting because it both speaks to the conservatism of Australia, which is needs to be robust, needs to be supported and all that, but also the willingness to take a bit of a risk on stuff that's brand new.
Exactly. But you go to some Israeli companies, they'll tell you that their first market out of Israel is actually going to be Australia as a bit of a test bed. So it's very, that's great to see.
That's there's an easy explanation for it, because if you know you succeed, great. And if you fail, nobody's ever heard of you. So,
But then you go to New Zealand, actually.
Or Fiji. There are all types of Oceania options. All right. And let's go the other way. So, you know, Australian family office, multifamily office, small institution thinks, hey, I want to make a step into Israel and I want to take advantage of what's been truly explosive growth. What are the things that they need to know? What do you tell them as being the sort of do's and don'ts?
Sure. So really it's all about relationships. We spoke before about the 50s and 60s of people trying to do things in Israel. It was just the right relationships of trust, etc. And I think now there's a whole new breed of Israeli business people who are more global. So really it's having that chemistry and that relationship of someone that you're able to trust. The funds play a terrific role, but now we're having a lot of amazing serial entrepreneurs who have tried and proven. And I think that's the key, is having those relationships. And if you can't talk to the decision makers, then move on till you find the right relationship.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think is probably true for anybody doing business outside of their home territory, which is find someone local, find someone that's got track record, experience, who's seeing the market from 20,000 foot and not just happen, you know, not just going for rolling the dice on a deal because, you know, you happen to like the guy's smile.
Exactly. But also if you can find an industry where you actually can add some value with either experience, knowledge and connections, that's very valuable. At the end of the day, we're in Israel, Darren, it's a small market with 9 million people, don't have access to the market. So investors that have that knowledge is a real value add.
9 million people, 4 million startups, 5 billion charities.
Exactly. Not complicated at all.
And to round it off, obviously, yeah, there's a lot of steam has come out of the tech market over the last 6 or 7 months. You're seeing that in the public markets. You're seeing that, starting to see that now in venture capital fundraising and a little bit in the margins on employment, the old story of people getting fired and that type of thing. How do you think that's going to impact? Yeah, there's a lot of money's coming in from Australia the last couple of years. Is that going to have a negative impact? Are you seeing this as a trend which is unstoppable? How do you see it?
Yeah, no, I actually see it being positive, because we've had COVID now for 2 years when people could even leave Australia, let alone get
to the great prison down under.
Great prison down under. But now they're actually able to visit here and the valuations have come down. So if anything, there's, I want to say bargains, but opportunities now probably make more sense with the exchange rate. And so actually really excited about what the next couple of years show, because the valuations were very high, but everyone was stuck in Australia. So now really it's a meeting of minds.
Okay, great. For those who are interested in exploring more about the Australia-Israel relationship or looking to develop partnerships either with Australian companies or Australian companies looking to partner with Israeli companies, Paul is definitely your man. From many years of experience knowing him, he knows more about the part of the global economy than absolutely anybody else. Paul, thank you very much for joining the podcast. That was terrific.
Pleasure. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay. And to all of you, if you've got all the way through to the end and put up with two Australian accents for the last 25 minutes or so, I promise that next time I will bring on an American guest. So thanks everybody for listening, and look forward to more episodes coming your way. Bye-bye.